From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys for this week. You're hearing my voice, so it's either one of two things. One, it's a retro episode from 2011 and back when I was doing them, when I wasn't lazy. Or two, Hunter's not here, and you're hearing my voice for that reason. And you would be right if you picked number two. There is no Hunter. He's just tied up with a bunch of stuff this week. He apologizes he can't make it, but let's hope we have him back next week. But as always, faithful Dr. Watson to my Sherlock Holmes is here. John Grace, how you going, my friend?
Pretty good.
You sound like you've fallen in that that pit that Dr. Watson was falling in the film that we watched today.
Oh, well, I guess this will sound like one of those old TV prints of this movie that were always around.
I actually checked a box set I had. For the record, by the way, we're doing 1944 Sherlock Holmes and the Scarlet Claw with Basil. Do you say Basil Rathbone or do you say Basil Rathbone?
I say Basil Rathbone.
Only basil for food, is it? For the spice?
Yeah. As far as my talking goes, yeah. I've always called him Basil. Because of Fawlty Towers, so that's how I know the name.
Oh, yeah. Basil Fawlty, of course. Yes. Starring Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson. And I did look on this box set that I had. It was literally like 50 crime and thriller movies for $5. I picked it up at a department store here to see if that was on there. And there was like about 48 other Sherlock Holmes films on there, but not this one. So I thought, yeah, typical, just my luck. So I did have to watch it on YouTube. Somebody up on there, I think the uploader was Free Movies, they're called. And they've uploaded a damn nice print of this film, I must say.
It's probably the UCLA remastered version that was financed by Hugh Hefner.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. There was an American Blu-ray box set and DVD set put out by MPI about 10 years ago, and that had these new remastered transfers. And I couldn't afford the Blu-ray box set this month, so I found the Optimum. Optimum is a UK video company, for those outside of the UK that don't know the company. They put out the same transfers, or possibly enhancements of those transfers, on a DVD set that was pretty affordable. It's like $25 on eBay. And actually, unlike the American set, they have a bunch of commentaries by Sherlock Holmes experts and a lot of liner notes and various extras.
Very cool. So yeah. It's quite possible it's come from one of those.
Very likely.
Yes. There is a Sherlock Holmes box set out over here, DVD only, no Blu-ray of it, unfortunately. And I don't know if that's on there. I don't remember.
Very likely it is if it's like the complete Rathbone Sherlock Holmes set. It's often regarded by the fans as the best of the Universal run of the series, because it started at 20th Century Fox for the first two movies, and then Universal picked up the rights and hired Rathbone and Nigel Bruce,
who are unarguably, undoubtedly, I should say, the best Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson in my book.
Yeah, certainly the most popular in pop culture, and I don't care about that BBC Sherlock series, and nope. It's nothing. I mean, as much as I enjoy the Downey Jude Law Holmes movies, I mean, there's only two of them. They're not anything close to these in terms of inventiveness or sharp writing.
No.
For whatever reason, these actors, Rathbone and Bruce, just kind of embrace the characters and kind of, I think whenever you read the stories, you can't help but think of these guys visually as Holmes and Watson, because they're that embedded into our culture mind, as these, this is Holmes and Watson.
Yeah, they're pretty synonymous with the, the image of Holmes and Watson. Now, I was going to say, you just mentioned there the Robert Downey Jr., Jude Law ones. I found the first one to be enjoyable. I, I struggled through the second one. It took me a long ass time to finally finish it.
Yeah, the second one has kind of awkward pacing. There's a lot of things I like in it, but the pacing is a bit sluggish in parts. And they were trying to, I think they were trying to jumble like three different stories elements into it, and it doesn't always work well. I'll take it over the much overrated Jeremy Brett Sherlock Holmes TV show that all these Holmes fans claim to just love. And I can't get through a single episode of that. I don't care how faithful it is to the Doyle stories. It's an incredibly boring visual experience to sit through. You know, it's English television of the late 70s and 80s was just dreadful looking. A lot of natural light filming and stuff. It just and there, everything's drab. And did you ever see Robin of Sherwood?
No, I think my brother was saying he was a massive fan of that show.
Yeah, it's got hardcore fans. It's got a unique style, but it has this kind of, like, the way it's filmed, it looks like 16mm, you know, all outdoors and natural light, and it's just kind of like, if you're watching it on high-def TV, it's pretty ugly looking, but the Jeremy Brett Sherlock Holmes show, to me, is just really ugly to watch. It's not, like, if you watch these Rathbone movies, they look great.
Yeah,
like
beautiful.
Black and white, they're shot on Universal Studio sets, the first two Fox films, of course, shot on the Fox lot, I guess. They just look fantastic. They're perfectly made. But, yeah, you get into the 80s British TV version with Jeremy Brett, it's got that kind of really ugly style I can't get through. And I think Brett was a little overrated for his interpretation. I've been lately watching some Russian Sherlock Holmes TV movies from the late 70s. They're surprisingly fantastic.
That's Sherlock Holmesnikov, isn't it?
It should be Sherlock Holmesky, I think.
Holmesky and Dr. Watsonivich.
Yeah, it's weird because they duplicate the look of London in the Soviet Union, which could not have been easy for them, but maybe they had an unlimited budget being the communist country they are or whatever. Yeah. But it's surprisingly really good. There's some unintentional laughs, but because they obviously didn't plan for it to be seen outside of the Soviet Union. But they're really faithful and very sharply made. They're pretty terrific and interesting. But there's various interpretations that I like. My favorite is Ian Richardson's Sherlock Holmes movies of the 80s. There's only two of them. There's Hound of the Baskervilles and Sign of the Four. And in America, they were premiered on the HBO channel, or HBO cable channel.
I'm surprised they haven't taken Hound of the Baskervilles and, like, really jazzed it up with new, you know, hot young actors and lots of gore and blood and, you know, CGI werewolves and shit in it.
Do like what Hammer did with the Peter Cushing version in the 50s, where they made it violent and had, like, a rape scene and everything.
Mm.
And, you know, the typical Hammer way, I guess, was to make it edgy. And well, there's a movie, Study in Terror, which had Sherlock Holmes versus Jack the Ripper, and I forget the actor's name, John Neville, I think was his name.
Right.
And he played Sherlock Holmes like Mike Hammer. Like he's like punching people and
really?
he was like the mean tough Holmes that you didn't really see in the movies too often. Although the movie we're talking about tonight is got a little more of the combative Sherlock Holmes than usual. From Rathbone, but who, by the way, did you know that Rathbone was like a World War I hero, like killed men on the battlefield and stuff?
No, I had no idea about that.
Yeah, he was like a decorated World War I veteran.
That was not uncommon to have guys who fought in World War I or Korean War or something to become actors later on. It was, you wouldn't find it these days. These days, they're just pansies.
No, not at all. They never come from military or even athletics or anything.
Yeah. No, I didn't know that at all. But, all right, let's talk about the one that we are going to be discussing, which is The Scarlet Claw from 1944. I'd never seen it before. The ones I had seen were obviously Hound of the Baskervilles, and that one you mentioned, A Study in Terror, is on that box set I've got, so I will dive into that. But I've also seen Terror by Night was the other one.
Terror by Night, yeah. Is that the one on the train?
Yes, and also...
Yeah, I just watched that a couple of weeks ago. I thought that was really well made.
And the other one was Sherlock Holmes Dressed to Kill. That's another one, isn't it?
Yeah, none of them are bad, from what I can tell.
No, they're not bad where you sit there and go, this is insufferable. I mean, let's start with the one we're going to be talking about, The Scarlet Claw. It is about... Oh, God, help me out here, John, because I watched this earlier this morning. It's about a woman named Lady Penrose. Lady Penrose, of course.
Yes.
Who is murdered by an unknown figure, and you don't see the murder, but you actually see her at the start ringing the church bell for help to alert the villagers. And her husband, who is it Lord Penrose? Or something?
Yes.
Yeah. Played by the actor, I didn't catch his name, but he was in House of Wax, the Vincent Price one, who played...
Paul Kavanagh.
Okay, yes, right? That name sounds right. He was in House of Wax at the start, who played the prospective investor in Vincent Price's new wax museum before Vincent Price was burnt up in the film. So that's where I knew him from. Anyway, Lord Penrose is at a cult meeting. How odd to see a society, because this is set in Canada, isn't it, this film?
Yeah. In fact, I think it was shot under the title Sherlock Holmes in Canada. Obviously, they realized that wasn't very commercial, but the funny thing is I noticed that Canada is portrayed as being more like England, which I'm wondering if that's the way it was back then.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Next scene is at the occult meeting. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson are there listening and being sort of objective sort of observers of what's being said. Young boy goes up and gives Lord Penrose a message. Lord Penrose excuses himself to take a phone call and finds out that his wife's been killed. Did you find it odd that when he found out, he was like basically emotionless? He's like, oh, my wife's died.
I wonder if that was intentional to like set him up as a red herring. Like,
yeah, yeah, I think you're right. Because I thought, this guy's not really showing much emotion for the fact his wife's died. But yeah, I think you're right there. He's like the old, you know, everybody's a suspect is the way they played this one out.
They one of the better examples of that, I think. They did a terrific job of it.
Yeah. Anyway, Holmes becomes intrigued by the case and decides to investigate it against everybody's wish, especially Lord Penrose, which is what you're saying, John, is what sets him up as a possible... you know, suspect in the case. And then it's just a case of Sherlock Holmes and Watson following the trail. And I found myself a few times going, it's got to be this guy.
Yeah.
No, it's got to be this guy. So completely falling for the way they'll set it all up. They'd structured it. And I think, though, and we won't give away who the murderer is, but I think there was one clue in there that Sherlock Holmes dropped when he was talking in the bar to a particular person. And I don't know if... it's hard for me to say to you without really giving it away, but if you can cast your mind back. It was when Sherlock Holmes was doing the retelling a story and using a particular person as a hypothesis.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, I got to about just before the confrontation Sherlock Holmes has about an hour into the film, where he sees who the killer is and they have a conversation. The killer is obscured by darkness like a silhouette. But I'm right. Like, oh, okay, I'm pretty sure it's that guy, but I still wasn't 100% sure. But yeah, I mean, I've got to say that I found the performances in this film fantastic. Rathbone and Bruce were just made. I wonder if they ever got along in real life, but I know they got a bloody fantastic chemistry on set.
I think they got along fine. I think Rathbone actually got Bruce the job as Watson.
Oh, okay.
He was like, come to Hollywood, we're going to make a lot of money. You're going to play Watson or something, you know. However, Rathbone eventually started to hate the Sherlock Holmes role because he was completely typed after that as Sherlock Holmes, and fans would approach him on the street and he would be like, stop it. You know, like he felt he was underappreciated for his previous performances before Sherlock.
Yeah.
Which it's just the problem when you're so perfect for the role, that's all people think about. So, and he was later in his career, so he couldn't pull like a Sean Connery and do a bunch of non, you know, formula 007 type stuff or non Sherlock Holmes type movies, you know, afterwards to like save his career. He was, you know, he was on his way out. This is a Universal B series. It wasn't the A lineup. And Universal back then wasn't really a prestigious studio. They mostly produced a lot of juvenile stuff. It was like Sherlock Holmes. This is really made for 12-year-old boys. That was the audience or intended audience. Mm. And of course, think about our Marvel movies are made for, I'm guessing, 30-year-olds who think like 12-year-olds or something. But
the mentality of
Yeah, you know, the kind of regressive immaturity we have now, or people wanting to be grown-ups wanting to be children, or it's kind of the life now. Whereas back then, 12-year-olds were more interested in adult storylines. But yeah, there's like Sherlock Holmes, they had Abbott and Costello, they had the monster movies, Frankenstein and the Wolfman and the Mummy, and all of that was really intended as, you know, it was a juvenile studio. Like, that was the bulk of their product.
Yeah,
they weren't like they are today, where they just make, well, actually they are kind of like that today, Fast and the Furious, that sort of thing. It's all made for, you know, kids.
Yeah,
to make kiddie entertainment.
But not adrenaline, sort of junky. Sort of
right. And I don't think critics gave the series much respect back then. I don't know why any actor would really care. I know that Rathbone made a lot of money, or made a decent amount of money on this series.
Yeah.
He also played Sherlock Holmes on an excellent old-time radio Sherlock Holmes series with Nigel Bruce, and it's fantastic. And there's probably about 100 episodes out there on archive land of the internet that you can find.
I've got to get me some of those for sure for the road trip at work each night. Now, what were your thoughts on this film, and how many times did you see this before suggesting this for today?
I saw this once before in the 1980s on the old Key Video. Key Video was an extension of, if I'm recalling correctly, it was 20th Century Fox's video arm for stuff they didn't want to boast of producing, and somehow they ended up with the rights to the Universal Sherlock Holmes movies for video.
Right.
Maybe Universal just didn't care, or they were in public domain, but Fox had some really good prints and released them on videotape, and my local public library had these to check out, and that's how I saw them. And so I wanted to get back to it because I'd talked to other friends of mine who were big fans of the Rathbone Home films, and everybody talked about how much they loved the Scarlet Claw. So I was like, hey, why don't we review this? Because I want to watch it again. And this is my first time seeing it in a couple of decades. And it was a blast. Because I'd forgotten everything. You know, I just remember the atmosphere and that was it. So I forgot who the killer was. And the fact that the monster, they think it's a monster glowing in the woods. So it's like Hound of the Baskervilles with a man instead of a dog.
That was a fantastic effect how they did that. I was really stunned. Like, wow, that looks kick ass. And
well, that's what I loved about it, was this was basically the Holmes that was done like a Universal monster movie. And on the same sets, if you think about it.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Those are the same sets used in the Frankenstein films and everything. And Rathbone was in The Son of Frankenstein, which we reviewed a couple of years ago. I mean, Hunter did that one, and he's terrific.
I was
in that
there as well.
Yeah, this is the Holmes movie that's closer to a Universal monster movie.
Well, it's even got that same fanfare at the start of the Universal monster. You know, da 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 da.
Yeah, it's the old school Universal opening. So it's but it feels more like that sort of setting, and it's funny because the series, I don't feel like they ever tried to have people speak with real British accents. They try to go for like a mid-Atlantic sound. And of course, with the Canadian setting, it doesn't stick out as much.
The Shadow, right? The radio play, the mid-Atlantic Shadow radio series.
Yeah, it's kind of just like having no act. It's kind of like, it's the way Cary Grant talked is the best way to describe it. They were trying to push that as the common way to speak in the 1930s through movies and the radio. Like, they didn't want America to be a country of accents. They wanted everybody to speak mid-Atlantic, so they tried.
Boy, that failed.
You know,
now
we would call
it
broadcast, the way they talk on the news.
Yeah. Another good thing about this was, and with a lot of the Sherlock Holmes films done by Rathbone and Bruce, was the fact that they're done in 75 minutes or thereabouts. You know, you can tell the clear, concise story in an hour and 15 minutes. And, you know, as we go back before, we've said before, why the hell do films these days need to be 2 hours and 25 minutes? It just, unless your story warrants that, I can't see why you'd need any more than 90 minutes.
I've yet to see anything in the last few years that couldn't have been cut by 25 minutes.
Well, a perfect example here. I've got this film, Patriots Day. I picked up Mark Wahlberg,
right,
part of the 2-for-20 deal, because I really wanted Amazon Women on the Moon. 2 hours and 2 hours and 13 minutes. I mean,
oh yeah,
you don't need to. Yeah, okay. I get the stories. A sensitive one about the Boston bombings, but that's a big investment. 2.25 hours, or
I know, it's a lot of time. It's a lot of time out of your day.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they better be pretty much filled with necessities in there, necessary scenes. Otherwise, it's just filler. It's all it is in my eyes. I mean,
yeah, and it used to be that a movie that was over 2 hours in length was a roadshow feature, which meant that was the prestigious Lawrence of Arabia type thing.
Yeah, well, not these days. Yeah. These days, it's pretty much scenes, but you have to have a film written for at least 2 hours, which makes no sense whatsoever.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think 88 minutes is all you need for an action movie. I think it only needs to run 88 minutes. There's no reason to run any longer than that. It's just, it's very rare.
Well, it was like when I watched this film, Guesthouse Paradiso, the bottom movie, a couple of mornings ago I watched it. And was it Sunday morning it was? And I popped it on, hour and 25 minutes, done, all finished.
Yeah.
That was it, you know, I got my laughs out of it, enjoyed it again. I saw it first time it came out, back out in 2000 or 99, whatever it was. And, yep, fast, quick, done. That was it.
And I think the only movie in recent memory that runs that lean is the Wesley Snipes thriller, Passenger 57, which came out in, like, 1993. Well, it's only, like, 72 minutes or 78 minutes. It's really short.
It's one of the better films he made of his. It's like, wow, okay, that was really quick and it was done. Same with, well, then again, the counter-argument today is Showdown in Little Tokyo, which is an hour and 18. And it's like, oh, God, this feels like 3 hours 18. So it's okay.
They even did all the kicks in slow motion just to stretch out. It's still too short.
Yeah, I know. It's like, it's not a great film. But tell us about some of the other Sherlock Holmes films. I mean, this film is really hard to review because if you basically give away one little snippet, you can give away of who the murderer is.
Right. I will note that Sherlock does a judo throw in this movie, which
yes.
In the stories he is a master of judo. I think that was Doyle kind of changed the name a little in the stories, but it was basically the late 19th century Englishman's version, English gentleman's version of judo and jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
And, for fighting, which was all the Japanese wrestling throws, and this is one of the few films where Rathbone shows some physicality like that.
Yep, and it was also the same film where I'm guessing that most of the budget was spent on fog machines. There's a lot of fog in this movie.
It's funny because they said the character was the monster was spitting fire, and I wonder if they kind of based it on Spring Hill Jack, the legendary London boogeyman of the 19th century that terrorized the villages.
I don't know. It's possible.
I don't know. I tell you, if they were going to do a new Sherlock Holmes movie and they wanted to make it atmospheric, do Sherlock Holmes versus Spring Hill Jack.
No, you know why they won't do it? Because no one knows Spring Hill Jack, and everyone's too lazy to look that person up.
Yeah, I know. The only people who know are oddballs like me that follow all the weird Freudian stories that sound so impossible, you know, from the old days. Mm-hmm. And the odd coverage of that stuff, us coast-to-coast listener types.
Yep. So what were some of the other Sherlock Holmes films you can recommend?
You mean of the Rathbone series?
Yeah.
I'd recommend any of them, but I think my favorite of that series is The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes with George Zucco as Moriarty. I think that one's just fantastic. It's like perfectly shot, perfectly edited. That was the last of the Fox series. It's weird they only made two because it seems like a perfect fit. The problem with a lot of the Universal movies with some fans is they're updated to be set during World War II because there was sort of a mandate from the government that all Hollywood movies had to be patriotic, so we'd all be ready to fight the Nazis,
right?
And, or Japan. So it's set in modern times, but it's not that far-fetched for the characters because most people don't realize that the casebook of Sherlock Holmes was written by Doyle in the 1920s.
Yeah.
So it's set in modern time, so not a stretch.
Was there ever a story going around that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle didn't even create Sherlock Holmes or somebody else?
I haven't heard that.
Haven't heard that? Okay.
He was sort of an imitation of Edgar Allan Poe's character Dupin. But I think that's his name, Dufin or something like that. For those who don't know, Edgar Allan Poe wrote the first mystery story with a detective, and Doyle kind of expanded on that concept and kind of created the modern mystery with his Sherlock Holmes stories.
Okay. I don't know. Maybe he was some basement dweller who said, Sherlock Holmes wasn't created by Arthur Conan Doyle, man.
Well, there's always the myth that the author didn't create the character. It seems to all be persistent, but I've never seen it about Doyle. I guess it's because he's the opposite of Sherlock Holmes in real life. He totally fell for every type of spiritual medium thing, and Lady Doyle was a mentalist or medium or whatever, claimed to talk to the dead and everything. So he totally fell for all the gaga and the silly stuff. He wasn't like a James Randi type that you would think the creator of Sherlock Holmes would be. His friend Harry Houdini was. He started all that stuff, but Doyle himself was actually, he fell for the whole photo fairy gag or whatever the two little girls came up with. Mm. Like, he was a total sucker for all that stuff. So he was not anything like the character he wrote about.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, and I think maybe that's why people try to now claim, oh, he didn't really create the character. It's like, well, Holmes was sort of an imitation of the detective that Edgar Allan Poe created with the murders in the Rue Morgue. But it was, he expanded on it. He made it more like the way we know the quirky detective today. He invented that whole character based on, Doyle had a teacher in med school, Dr. Joseph Bell. Joseph Bell had this incredible ability to look at your watch and could tell you all your daily habits, or he could look at your shoes and tell you everywhere you'd been in the last 2 weeks. He had like that superhuman ability of deduction. He was just one of those types. And that's what he based Sherlock Holmes on. And there's also a theory that when Doyle met Oscar Wilde, the flamboyant gay writer, he liked enough of Oscar Wilde's quirks that he put them into Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, okay.
Because, he was like, just to make him a more colorful character. And, I guess we call him Penny Dreadfuls back then or whatever. But Holmes being in Strand Magazine, I think, was a bit more prestigious than Varney the Vampire or whatever. So, that's kind of the thing. Like, I mean, recently I'd heard Bram Stoker didn't actually write Dracula.
Yeah, I've seen a documentary about that as well, where he had.
Yeah, there's always kicking stuff around like that. But as far as I know, Sherlock Holmes is Doyle's creation completely. Yeah. Whatever his buffoonery in real life was, can't take away that he created Sherlock Holmes.
No, that's right.
Right, and I like a lot. A lot of the films are good. Some of them I don't care for. I don't like the new BBC series. I do actually enjoy the CBS series Elementary with Johnny Lee Miller playing Sherlock Holmes. It's okay. It's fun. If you accept it for what it is, it's actually a lot of fun and has references to the character that you don't see in a lot of the other film versions, like the fact that he's a beekeeper. I liked the I liked the Mr. Holmes movie recently with his name, Ian McKellen. I thought that was really good. It was very well made. It's a pastiche. It's not based on the Holmes stories, but it's a very good film. And I've seen a number of good ones. I don't care for The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes, the Billy Wilder movie that a lot of people love. I don't like it at all, although it looks great. And Christopher Lee is terrific as Holmes's brother, but Mycroft Holmes. But I don't think it's a good movie.
What about Gene Wilder as young Sherlock Holmes?
Sherlock Holmes' smarter brother.
Oh, smarter brother. Yes, it is.
You're right. Yeah, I tried watching that on Blu-ray. I couldn't get through 15 minutes of it. It's just the jokes were falling flat. Yeah, it's like they didn't. I always joke that those Mel Brooks-style comedies were always marketed to kids for some reason. They didn't know how to market them. And that's what it felt like. It was really bizarre. And if you're talking about young Sherlock Holmes, that Amblin Entertainment production.
Yes.
I thought it was okay, but... even as a kid, because I'd read the stories, I was put off by them having Holmes and Watson meeting at school when I know that they met as adults. When Watson came back from Afghanistan and, found out his new roommate was Sherlock Holmes. And Holmes, he's an odd character. I've seen some recent TV movies try to there was one with Rupert Everett that was really bad. That portrayed Holmes as an atheist. He's not. If you read the stories, he reads the Bible. He knows it back and forth. But he doesn't believe that the Earth revolves around the sun. He thinks the sun revolves around the Earth because that's how he sees it from his observation. So the character has quirks like that. But You know, my favorites, of course, I really enjoy Study and Terror, the John Neville film. Mm. I do love the two Ian Richardson versions, which are Hound of the Baskervilles and Sign of the Four. I think those are actually my favorite Holmes movies of all time because they kind of introduced me to the character when I was a kid as something more than – before that, all I knew was the Daffy Duck Sherlock Holmes cartoon where he was shy. I think it was Sherlock Holmes. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah, I think that was it, yeah.
Picks. Dr. Watson was, of course, solving everything, you know, and Daffy Duck's Holmes was taking all the credit. But that's all I knew of the character before that. So when I saw the Richardson movies, they kind of blew me away because they portrayed Richardson as they had all the intellect. They had the atmosphere and he was also confrontational and tough. You know, I was thinking Holmes was some sort of milquetoast because of the cartoons. But no, he was like. You know, he was a tough guy. He had to be confrontational, so he's a fighter too. So that was fun.
Tell me something. You smoke a pipe, right?
Sometimes, yeah.
Is that because of Sherlock Holmes?
Probably. Well, also, my grandfather smoked a pipe. Both of my grandfathers smoked pipes.
Oh, okay.
So, but yeah, pipe smoking is sort of the. It's funny they talk about for those who like to take life in the slow lane or smoke, where you kind of take in and you taste the tobacco better than with a cigar or a cigarette. I mean, you don't taste anything with a cigarette, but so pipe smoking's kind of become like an occasional hobby. Like, you know, every couple of months I'll just fill up the pipe and smoke it while I read a book about, you know, Operation Valkyrie or something.
In your red velvet dressing gown?
Yeah, I need to get a smoking jacket.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely need one.
Well, you know, Americans, we don't, even if we're smokers, we don't even smoke inside our houses anymore. So I smoke it in the backyard while I'm reading some World War II book or whatever. So. Hectic, so I could be just like, you know, Sterling Hayden or something, or what you think your grandfather was like in the 70s.
Out in the hills of Denver with the bees swarming.
Yeah, yeah, the bees are swarming behind me and smoking the pipe and reading, you know, some book with a big Nazi swastika on it and an American eagle, like, tearing into it.
Oh, God, imagine if they made a Sherlock Holmes film today. It'd just be, it'd be one massive social justice warrior. Metaphor be like
from a BBC series that they went in that direction. They had like Holmes and Watson are constantly mistaken for a gay couple, which is annoying.
Yeah,
and that's because the I think the main story editors or the showrunners of that series are gay, so they had to throw that in there constantly. So you're watching it and you constantly have to put up this tiresome gag of "Are you two together?" And it's like, you know, it's just like,
yeah.
Who cares?
They made one now, if Hollywood did an adaptation of Sherlock Holmes, it would be a transgender gets murdered.
Right.
Holmes and Watson have to go and solve the case. They're mistaken for gays all the time. And in the end, the killer would be some alt-right Nazi.
With a Pepe t-shirt.
With a Pepe t-shirt. Who leaves the symbols, whose clue is always the letters K-E-K everywhere. It's like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's what it would be. It would be complete, like, social justice garbage. No real mystery to it. I mean, that's how it is watching American mystery dramas or procedurals. Mm. Is, you know, the guilty guy is always going to be the white Christian.
Yep.
And like if they have a Muslim character, the Muslim's always a red herring. You know.
Oh yeah.
And it's just like, every time it's always going to be the square, clean cut guy. They'll have like an S&M freak, and that's portrayed as completely normal. And then, of course, you know, your killer ends up being the Bible thumper. Like, you know, Bible John is still around today, strangling women. You know,
gone are the days of the Iranian, you know, tail headed killers. But those days are gone.
Yeah, you know, back in the day when you could expect Martin Shaw and Lewis Collins to blow them out off the screen with. You know, Uzis or whatever. It's like, that's not happening anymore.
No. Like I said, another episode or two back, I said that now they'd be the detectives working alongside the black and Asian detectives to hunt down the nasty white Christian male. It's like,
I mean, you know, everybody's like, oh, you guys are just complaining and whining. No, it's actually true. If you watch those shows, it's
always, yeah, it is. It's so true. Otherwise, yeah, we're not complaining. We're just stating what's out there the way it is.
It's just like, it just makes it too predictable. And that's the problem. It becomes predictable writing. You know, it's like even the show 24, when Jack Bauer would be busting up some, you know, the arm of Allah or whatever group he was going after. It would always be they were controlled by the oil companies to manipulate profits. It was some far-fetched thing that made no sense whatsoever, but whatever. You know, I mean, I know it's just TV, but it's just silly.
So, you know, it's the those big bad capitalists out there who would control the world. Why can't the main guy be some old 86-year-old Hungarian with big fucking saggy eyes like George Soros be, wouldn't do that. No,
the closest we got to that, strangely, was Kingsman of the Secret Service.
I keep hearing about those films. I need to see them.
Yeah, and I haven't seen the sequel yet, but the first film was a complete shocker when I saw it in a theater. I was surprised to see this coming out of Hollywood. did that say released by 20th Century Fox? And did I see that correctly?
Is that the one with Obama's head got blown up, right?
Yeah. Not only that, it's just that the villain Sam Jackson plays is like a cross between Russell Simmons, the rap music entrepreneur, and George Soros. And he wants to cut down on the population and have people kill each other to hold off global warming. It's shocking when you watch it. It's like, I can't believe anything with this point of view was actually released. And I mean, I know the director claims he's not a conservative or whatever, but you know, he might be a British liberal, which would probably make him similar to a conservative.
Yeah, somewhat. But I've got to see that now. I think it was on part of the 2 for $20 list, that first Kingsman movie, and I just overlooked it.
Oh, you'll enjoy it. I think you'll really dig it. I always said it's like if Moonraker was a good movie.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not. John, have you got anything else you want to bring up about Sherlock Holmes?
I say if you want to watch these movies, the Rathbone, you know, Nigel Bruce series, you could start with any one. They're not set. There's no continuity.
Yeah.
One doesn't lead to the other. Nothing's actually related to the prior films. Some fans complain that Nigel Bruce plays Watson is stupid. I don't really agree. I think he puts a lot of comedy in there and some buffoonery just because that was the formula at the time.
Yeah, there's some comic foil to Nigel Bruce, but he's not stupid by any stretch.
No, not at all. It's like, I mean, when he picks up a gun, he goes, "Oh, not you." You know, there's always that scene where he picks up the gun and gets serious. And
yeah.
he plays Watson as the ex-Afghanistan soldier, you know. So I think he's really good. To me, it doesn't bother me at all. If you want, you know, Watson, the way he's portrayed, I mean, of course, Jude Law is closer to what Watson is in the books, but you can always read the stories if you want the serious Watson. But I think Rathbone's Holmes is very, very close to what Doyle wrote. It's close enough.
Would you say Rathbone and Bruce were pretty much the true personification of Holmes and Watson in the vision of Conan Doyle?
You know, it's a funny thing. Conan Doyle didn't care who played Sherlock Holmes. He said it doesn't matter because so many at that time stage actors and silent movie actors were playing him. And I guess maybe Doyle lived long enough to see some of the talkies with I forget the name of the actor. I think it's Arthur Whaley or something like that. I didn't look it up. But there were some British Sherlock Holmes movies in the 1930s that I still haven't sat through. But he said it doesn't matter who plays him because, you know, so many actors have played him that it's so the role is open to interpretation. It didn't bother him. It wasn't anything to him.
He's like James Bond. You know, he pretty much, you know, he's not restricted to just one actor. Yes, people out there have their favorites being either Sean Connery or whoever. But
right.
It's not like, okay, and this is different because it's a comedy show. It's not like Get Smart, where it is basically right. Don Adams and that's it.
Right.
Yeah, here is, you know, the...
Well, also, I tried to sit through the Steve Carell Get Smart. I didn't think it was like they'd never even seen the TV show.
Yeah, I never saw it, but I know a lady at the store goes, when I was talking to her a number of years back, she goes, just don't bother. Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. It was nothing like the TV show, which has its own unique style, whereas Maxwell Smart is an idiot, but he's also incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
You realize the only reason he's put on assignments is because he's going to kill everybody anyway.
It was also like Starsky and Hutch when they made that movie, that god-awful Starsky and Hutch movie with Ben Stiller and Owen Flatnose, whatever his name is. Oh, God, it was bad.
Yeah, they didn't get the concept. They could have made a good comedy out of it, but they didn't quite get the idea. Then grasp what worked about the original show and how you could actually do something with that. Like, the only thing they got right was in the beginning, Vince Vaughn shoots the guy with a silencer on a revolver, which happened all the time on the TV show, which, as you know, if you shoot guns, that's impossible. Or a suppressor slash silencer cannot silence a revolver. It can't do anything to the sound of a revolver because of the gas escaping from the chamber. So they had that anachronism in the film, you know, that just stood out. And I think they did that on purpose. That's about the only thing I liked about it. The rest of it's a mess.
What about the Chips movie?
Never saw it. I didn't want to.
Oh, no. I saw the trailer. I'm like, I wanted to put a hole through the wall. It was that bad.
Shows you all you need to know about that movie. You feel like you've seen it just as you watch the trailer. It's like, no interest. They don't know how to make comedies today.
They don't. They don't. They really don't.
Comedies are just being mistaken for a gay couple. That seems to be the height of comedy. And just that type of idiocy. They don't really understand slapstick or satire, or it just seems to be a lost art. Perfect. I don't know if it's just because young generation is not very well read or well schooled on old comedy. I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
I was going to ask you this too. Did you have any favorite Sherlock Holmes movies, or you just haven't seen a ton?
Well, like I said before earlier, the ones I have seen are the ones I pretty much liked, which was Dressed to Kill, Terror by Night, Hound of the Baskervilles, and now this one. I think this one's probably my favorite a lot so far from memory. I need to go back and check out the others. I know I did like Terror by Night quite a bit.
Yeah. It was really good. I mean, none of them are bad. I mean, you may have some that are weaker than others, but they're not, certainly not, you don't feel like you wasted your time sitting through them.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I mean, they're a total pleasure. It's like a Charlie Chan movie or Mr. Bodo film or, you know, Mike Shane or any of the really good B series. Just chill out. You know, watch it before you go to bed. It's a fine time. Better than watching modern TV, I'd say.
Oh, what? Watching a whole bunch of geeks making jokes where the audience laughs every 15 seconds? No, thanks.
Yeah, half the jokes either involve Game of Thrones, the other half are Star Wars, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. My daughter watches Big Bang Theory, I think. Oh, God, it's bad.
I've never seen it. I have friends who dig it, and of course these friends love all that kind of nerd pop culture stuff, and it's... Some of that stuff I like, but not enough to where I want a sitcom where they're making those jokes. You know, I'd rather watch, say, Girlfriend and Son or Love Thy Neighbor or Fawlty Towers or just something completely different.
You know? I need to turn you on to Mind Your Language as well.
Yeah, I've got that in my Amazon UK queue, so I'm kind of hoping the cart, hoping the price was going to drop a little bit. I did order Bless This House. So,
you ordered it. Very good.
It's on the way. I haven't, hasn't arrived yet, but it is on the way.
Very good.
Yeah. I was looking for it cause I'm really getting into Sid James's, style and, delivery.
Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah.
It's great. Like even sitting through the Hancock half hours that may not be as sharp as like, if he shows up, then like suddenly it's just funnier. Even when he's like one of those guys, you just look at him and start laughing.
Absolutely. That's one of the things. He's got that busted up face and he's just, that
he always looks like he's up to something. You know, he does a lot of acting with his eyes. You know, half the jokes are just the way he's making expressions at Hancock's desperation.
Oh, you're gonna enjoy Bless His House. That's great. It's so funny. Sid James is so funny in that show. Yeah. It's like, I remember this one gag, one of the early episodes, I think it was, where the neighbor comes around, Patsy Rowland's who's been in a bunch of Carry On films as well, I believe, and she gets, you know, Sid James's wife says, "Oh, you want a cup of tea?" She goes, "Oh, yes, please." And then she goes, "How many sugars?" And she goes, "Five." And Sid James goes, "Five." And just she makes the tea, and Sid just pours the tea into the sugar bowl instead.
Because I can just picture him doing it and the way he'd sound saying it.
Yeah.
Like he can make, like, even if a Carry On film is starting to drag, all he's got to do is do that lecherous laugh that he does, and it's just like, you're cracking up.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. I did find that some of the I found a lot of the Carry On suffered without him.
I watched Carry On Spying yesterday, and it was kind of disappointing. I thought it'd be funnier, and then, of course, Sid James is not in the films before he joined the series.
That's with Kenneth Williams as the lead, isn't it?
Yeah, and Kenneth Williams, there's only so much of it I can take, you know, cause it's kind of just the same prissy.
Yeah.
You know, he's just playing the prissy fey gay guy, like, he really overdoes it. And it's like, if they have a girl flirting with him, it doesn't make any sense because we know he's gay. So it's like, it's so overdone and just,
yeah,
you know, it's like you're watching a Carol Burnett sketch that won't end or something. I don't know.
I find the Carry On films are funnier in that same scenario where a girl's flirting with someone. When she's flirting with Kenneth Williams, it's not funny. When she's flirting with Sid James, you can just see Sid James, you know, smiling, his eyes light up.
Yeah.
And that's when it becomes funny, yeah.
You know, and, well, one thing I noticed about spying is Jim Dale is barely in the film, and he has, like, third billing, but he's really good at physical comedy, and they barely use him in the movie.
I just don't think he really fit with the Carry On. I mean, I liked him in Carry On Cowboy. He was really good in that. And Angela Douglas is just, oh, my God, drop dead gorgeous. But he just didn't quite fit. And he was in that abomination of Carry On Columbus, which I saw at the theaters. It was just one of the fucking worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that was actually voted by British industry technicians as the worst British film of all time.
Yeah, I'd believe that. It was. We just sat there. I went with my brother and Rob went as well, and we just sat there with our jaws on the floor. So this is just shit. Just an awful movie. Awful.
Well, I don't recall the 70s entries being very good either. So it's like
no, like Carry On Emmanuel wasn't very good. That was going more towards a sex comedy thing, and that didn't really suit the Carry Ons. A lot of it, because all theirs was more the implied sexual humor.
Yeah, how can you imply when Robin Asquith is banging some big-breasted chick in the film over in the next theater, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind those not Carry-Ons, the Confessions movies, they're okay, but they are what they are, you know, just literally, you know, tits and ass 70s comedies, that's all they are. And there was those, it was Confessions of a Window Cleaner, oh, no, sorry, what was the other one? Oh, Adventures of a Plumber's Mate, Adventures of a Taxi Driver. Yeah, there was a massive glut of those things.
Yeah, but over here they play it on our cable channels on what's called the After Dark.
Oh, that sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, like Cinemax and Showtime would have their After Dark. Or Showtime was After Hour, Cinemax it was Cinemax After Dark. And, you know, they used to just only show those on Friday nights and... let's show them Friday nights where the kids could stay up and watch them.
Yeah.
No school in the morning, you know.
No school.
But yeah, it's like, God, I haven't seen any of that stuff in ages. But I got the Carry On box set.
Oh, did you?
So I started with Carry On Spying because I'd never seen it. A lot of them I've never seen. I've only seen Carry On Khyber and Carry On Camping. And I think I've seen most of Carry On Cleo. But when I watched it, it was like an old bootleg tape.
Those ones, like, some of those early ones just don't work. Carry On Sergeant's not very funny. Carry On Cleo I didn't like at all. Carry On Cabbie wasn't that funny, and I found when they hit around the 65, I think from Carry On Cowboy onwards, they really got funnier, for sure. I'll tell you another one you got to check out, John, is Carry On Abroad. That's funny.
Carry On Abroad?
Carry On Abroad.
Carry On Loving and Carry On Abroad are probably going to be the next ones I watch, just
because
I'm fully unfamiliar with them.
Carry On Loving, I know that's the one set in the dating agency, but what's the one that's set at the hotel and Sid James is running the beauty contest?
I want to watch it now.
Oh, that's a piss of that. Just Sid James leering at all these women in bikinis. I'm pretty sure.
Okay, I'll find out. I'm going to try to watch some more this month and or before the month runs out. Yeah, what I should be watching Halloween movies. But,
Oh, because nobody does that, right? Nobody watches Halloween movies anymore.
Usually, you know, while I'm giving candy out to the trick-or-treaters, I'm usually watching a bunch of horror films on Amazon Prime, like old ones. I just have them running.
What ones would you watch?
Well, I mean, horror movies?
Horror movies.
Last year I watched, like, Curse of the Faceless Man, and I think I watched a Mario Bava movie, like I think I watched Black Sabbath.
Okay.
Yeah, you try to have ones that there's not going to be any profanity or anything heard when kids are coming up to the door. So
you're not going
to
have Halloween playing or Friday the 13th, all the obvious ones.
No, it's already tough enough. I got to put my dog, my Chihuahua, has to go into like a little pen so he won't bark at the trick or treaters.
Yeah, I mean those people out there. I mean, yeah, good luck to you that you can actually do this. But they say, okay, now it's Friday the 13th. I'm going to sit through all 10 Friday the 13th movies. I'm like, oh, cool.
Oh, no. No way. Max. I couldn't do it.
Watch one or watch the first two, maybe. I get it. Sitting there through three and four and five, that's a major commitment.
I can't do that. I can't binge. I can't even binge on TV shows. It's like I have to see something completely different.
Yeah. Well, I did. I watched. Like I said, I was watching Bottom, but I said one episode per night. That's it. I don't want to sit there and watch four or five in a row because there's only so much of even Adrian Edmonds and Rick Mayall, who I absolutely adore as comedians, that I can sit there and watch of them beating each other up. So one episode per night, and then I did pull out the Crime Story box that I've got in the garage, which scared me because I looked at the back of the box and it was out released by Payless Entertainment. I'm like, oh no, my heart sank. I forgot all about that. Payless Entertainment is probably the equivalent of you guys over there, Madison Entertainment, if you remember them.
Oh no.
Yeah. But my heart
the
sunk,
public
John.
Domain specialist.
But I popped into the Blu-ray. And I'm like, oh, wow, this looks good. I'm stunned. So that so I
either they got a license or they just ported the American DVDs.
I think they've quietly taken the American DVDs, put them out without the license because they didn't last on the shelves long. Mm-hmm. They disappeared. And that company went under. So, yeah. But they were notorious for releasing just like public domain John Wayne films for $3. And, yeah, and, you know, countless.
Yeah, I get it. Not everybody is Umbrella Entertainment and putting out just great videos.
Oh, dude, they are becoming like one of the premier companies over here for home video. Even above the, you know, the big players out there like Sony and Paramount and all them. Umbrellas.
Well, they're awesome. I just got their Blu-ray of Man from Hong Kong.
Which bought it.
It includes something like, you can actually, here's the funny thing. When it comes to movies, it's not the same for TV shows, but when it comes to movies, you can get the Umbrella movie releases through American Amazon for
decent
prices.
Okay.
Yeah, like I ordered, we're going to do Slaughter in San Francisco, and I was able to grab that, the Umbrella version off Amazon for like $10. And it's just because I guess domestic distributors get them, and I'm guessing they're region free. They don't play on my Blu-ray player, my main Blu-ray player, not my hacked one. But it doesn't want to play them, claiming the different region. But my understanding is they play on just about any player.
I've always found Umbrella be region free from memory because, like I said in a previous episode, the people who run Umbrella are basically just fans who all fell into this company and. Just put out stuff that none of the other majors will put out there.
Oh, man, I treasure my Umbrella box sets. I paid way too much for them back in the day, but Department S, the complete series, and Man in a Suitcase, just great.
Oh, okay.
They just did these incredible special features and everything. It's totally for fans of that stuff. It's, we don't see that in the States too often. Like, now when we have box sets, there's just no frills. They don't care.
Yeah, there was at one point. I know they put out Bride of Reanimator on DVD, and that was one of the worst-looking DVDs ever. I think they really picked their game up after around that period because they just, they just lift themselves out of the pit and just started releasing fantastic stuff.
The shocking thing is, like, the Man from Hong Kong Blu-ray has, like, something like three or four bonus Brian Trenchard Smith movies.
Yeah, I think it's got four
it's
or five.
Crazy. It's like crazy loaded. And I was like, geez.
Yeah,
that's
really the thing.
Taking advantage of the format.
Wasn't Stunt Rock one of them on there?
I believe it is. Yeah. Because I can just sell my old DVD.
Yeah.
I know. Well. I think Death Cheaters is on there, and he did a documentary about Hong Kong kung fu movies in like 1974 when they were in a boom, and it was always rare. Showed up on YouTube. I put it on my Facebook page, and then I think Brian Richard Smith saw it, and he sent a cease and desist to YouTube.
Oh, really?
But yeah. It's on the Blu-ray. Like you can watch it on the Blu-ray with the probably from Richard Smith's own personal print.
Yeah, because I know Umbrella get a lot of access to the Australian archives, the film archives over here. You know, they're pretty. They're pretty good. They're pretty accessible to these companies over here who want to sort of just load these things for bear with extras.
They're outstanding. Mm. I mean, it just really is. I'm surprised how many actual Umbrella releases I have on my shelf. Like, just blows me away.
They got a fully loaded Razorback Blu-ray coming out.
I know fans who are just hardcore into that movie.
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, I've not seen it since 84.
For some reason, when it played U.S. cable, it built this gigantic cult following in the U.S. Well, I don't know about gigantic, but, you know, it played on cable enough where it impressed a number of young viewers who are now old fans buying DVDs, so they're all looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, they basically call the tagline over here is Jaws on Trotters. So I'm like, oh, okay, I'll watch it.
I just remember thinking, it's all right, stylish, you know. But the funny thing is, when Russell Mulcahy movies, because he would always shoot, I think he would shoot in scope. Mm. And so on TV, when they're pan and scan, they just look like these sweaty messes. You know, it's just constant close-ups of sweaty faces and then the Razorback. So that's all I really remember about it.
Highlander was shot flat, wasn't it?
I believe so. I don't know if it's actually compromised on the TV print.
Mm. All right.
Like, if you see the two swordsmen clashing with their swords on your old tube TV and it's not going side to side, I think it's actually shot Super 35 or 185.
Mm, could be. All right, man, let's rate this movie. Let's rate it and let's wind it
definitely.
Up. All right. What are you going to give Sherlock Holmes the Scarlet Claw?
I give it a good 7.5.
Yep, that's what I've got penciled in as well, 7.5.
I should note, there's a literacy parade at my son's school this week, and most of his classmates are dressing up. It sounds like it's going to be mostly Harry Potter characters. They have to dress up like characters from books.
Mm.
So he's decided he's going to dress up as Sherlock Holmes.
Well, you got the pipe. Give him that as well.
We got the deerstalker hat. We found a deerstalker hat. They call it English detective costume set. And it was only like $5 at some costume store. And so it's the pipe, it's the hat, and he's got to get the magnifying glass. And we found a checkered houndstooth coat for him. That's all he has to wear, and that's his outfit for the literacy parade. And I guess he'll be there with a bunch of Harry Potters and Hermione. Is that the name of the girl in that series?
Oh, I don't know. Okay,
that's all kids read is Harry Potter, apparently. So, you know, I've shown him Sherlock Holmes movies. I guess I'm going to have to start reading them to him.
Yeah. Might as well. All right, man. All right, well, that's it for this week. It's, you know, been a bit of a tangent one as well, but also a lot of Sherlock Holmes. Hopefully they keep your, get your interest piqued. And, you know, go seek this out. If you really need to watch it and you're a cheapskate, it is on YouTube. But try and find the version released by the channel called Free Movies. Their print's really, really good. I did try watching another one, and it was just not good. So it runs about 73 minutes 49. So don't be fooled by ones out there say 1 hour and 50 minutes, and it was released 2 days ago. You're not getting what you're getting. You're getting some advertising shit, so don't fall for it. Yep. So on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Catch us at the usual haunts, midnightmoviecowboys.com. MidnightMovieCowboys@gmail.com. Over on the Facebook page over there. All right. Be back next week with something or another. Don't know just yet. Hopefully Hunter will be back next week. And on that note, I'm going to imitate him and say adios. Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com.
type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.